We're going to be moving around a bit in the New Testament this morning. If anybody wants to read along, we're going to be mostly in Galatians 5. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the cross and the enemy of the cross. The enemy of the cross, we know, is not Satan so much as the flesh. And I feel like what the Lord has put on my heart to share this morning is a continuation of what we ended last week in Philippians, not last week, but 2 weeks ago, in Philippians 3. So in beginning today's sharing, I want to first reread the last thing that we read previously. It was actually 3 weeks ago. This is Philippians 3:18. For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you, even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things. So we've seen that the mind which is set on earthly things is the enemy of the cross of Christ, not the enemy of the love of Christ or of the grace of Christ directly, but the enemy of the cross. Because the cross means one thing to the flesh, and that is death. What do you do if you feel in danger of your life? If you feel somebody is coming after you, there's basically three things you might do. You might fight. You might flee. The flesh does that a lot. You fight. You say, well, I don't even believe the gospel. I don't even believe that all this is true. I'm going to do whatever I want. Fight, fight, fight. And we flee. I just don't want to deal with it. I think I'll just flee into the pleasures of the world and forget about God's requirements of me. I'm not just talking about the heathens who reject the gospel either. I'm talking about those who would reject the full call of Christ to be fully crucified with him. So some fight and some flee. But there's one other thing that you might do. And that's bargaining. Or negotiating. Okay, you caught me. The gospel's true. Yes, I'm going to obey. But maybe I could just do some and you'd give me some reward. Maybe I could just do something and I'd get something in return. I don't want to give all and get all in return. That's too costly. So couldn't we work out some kind of deal? I was flipping through a Holman Bible the other night, which is another translation, and I just happened across Galatians 3:1. Now, when I was a child, I memorized Galatians, so I'm very familiar with what it says. It's the only complete book I ever memorized, other than Philemon, which doesn't count. And Galatians 3:1 says, O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you that you should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus Christ was clearly portrayed among you as crucified. The Holman says vividly portrayed and uses the word hypnotized instead of bewitched. And it only occurred to me just then, even though I've memorized Galatians and recited it many, many times, that there are two themes in the book. Now, Paul is talking to people who are not obeying the truth and who are resistant to the idea that Christ has been crucified. So we might think he was talking to the Corinthians. We might think he was talking to people who had said, well, Paul's not around. Start the party. Let's go back and do all the bad things that we were doing before that were so much fun. But he's not. He's talking to people who are straying into legalism, which is the idea that we can please God in the flesh by keeping rules. So legalism is the main theme of Galatians. He hardly discusses anything else, but there's a second theme throughout the book, and that theme is the cross. Paul mentions the cross of Christ incessantly in Galatians. It's a very short book, but it contains multiple mentions of the cross of Christ. So it's easy to see where the flesh and the cross are opposed to one another. But here, Paul is opposing the cross to legalism. So why is that? We sometimes talked about the plow and the ditch. On one side, you have license. Come on in, this will is fine. Just do whatever you want. It's what grace is for. God would like you to be clean and holy, but he doesn't really care if you come into his kingdom covered with mud, having made all the bad choices you want to along the way, so jump in with the rest of us. And on the other side, you have legalism. You got license over here, you got legalism over here. But what we can see in the book of Galatians is that they're actually the same thing. License fights and flees, legalism negotiates. Both have the same goal, to keep the flesh alive. So, legalism is just license in the clothes of righteousness. People who want to make and keep a lot of their own rules, we think, well, they must be the extra pious people who want to please God more. Well, there's some misguided people, yeah. But for the most part, and I know this from experience, because I've done this rule-keeping thing, rule-making and rule-keeping in my past. For the most part, they're the people who never wanted to please God in the first place, who are convicted but not converted, who know, okay, this is unacceptable, my life is unacceptable, but don't kill it. I'll fix it. I'll make the flesh acceptable to God. So just give me some rules to keep. You don't have any? Okay, I'll make up some. And I'll keep them. And I'll please God. And then maybe the flesh won't have to die. Now that brings us, and this is where I'm going to start jumping around in Galatians 5, to verse 11, where Paul says, "And I, brethren, if I still preach circumcision, why do I still suffer persecution? Then the offense of the cross has ceased." So what is the offense of the cross? Why is circumcision, which is something that God ordained for Israel in the Old Testament, opposed to the cross? Why can't you have both? What is our equivalent of circumcision? What is the thing that sets Christians apart, the outward thing that we do? It's baptism. Where Jews circumcise, Christians baptize. And those things are a very instructive picture of legalism versus the cross. In circumcision, a small part of the flesh is taken away, to mark the person as being special and set apart for God. That's how it worked in the Old Testament. But you kept the rest of the flesh. A person does not die in circumcision. Baptism is not a picture of anything being done partly. You don't stick your toe in the water and call that baptism. You are immersed in the water, and it's a picture of death. So circumcision is the compromise point. In the Old Testament, it was all that was required, but in the New Testament, it's the compromise point. Okay, I don't want to die, but I can be circumcised. I don't want to give up all the flesh, but I'll give up a little bit of it, if that then means that I can keep the rest and somehow dress it up and impress God and still have the flesh. Got to keep the flesh alive. The instinct to stay alive, it's extremely strong. What God requires of us is to override that instinct when it comes to the flesh. Now, there's not too many people today, there are some, who will go around and tell you you need to be circumcised and keep the Jewish law. We've actually met a disproportionately high number of such people. But for the most part, that whole thing has died out. So with no one going around telling us to be circumcised and keep the law and sowing that idea in our mind as they sowed it in the minds of the Galatians, we do it to ourselves. Only it's not circumcision and it's not God's law we're keeping. It's the things that we set up in our mind to say, well, I won't do this so that I can feel good about doing that. So I'm driving down the highway and I pass a billboard that has a raunchy picture on it. And I say, I will not look at the billboard. I drive past this billboard every day and I have not yet looked at it. And then I get home and I happen to see something on the news and I look at it. But see, that didn't fall under my rule, and I'm sure the Lord was impressed when I didn't look at the billboard. I'm sure he's keeping score and he knows that I've never looked at it. In fact, I pull the visor of my car down so I don't see it. So I can just do this over here. When I'm not watching, when I'm not keeping score, when I'm not requiring it of myself, and I can keep that. Where what God wanted to do was not eliminate this incident of lust and that incident of pride and this incident of anger, but strike at the head of it and crucify the flesh. So all those things become like, the flesh becomes like a tree that has been cut off at the root. It doesn't just shrivel up and die instantly sometimes. But it's been cut off and it is dying. But if instead of getting at the root, as we've said, we pick off the fruit, there will always be more. People have talked about putting sin on a diet. You know, I'll just have this much sin I think I can feel good about, but if I get to this much, I'm going to start feeling bad. So I'll make rules and I'll squeeze that sin down to where my sinometer only hits 3. And if it's a 6, I gotta confess, and if it's an 8, I'm gonna feel horrible for a week. So I'll keep it down here. And what we forget about is that it's not the sin that's the problem, it's the sinner, and the sinner is the flesh. It's the flesh that causes us to sin. So you don't put it on a diet, you cause it to die. So he goes on, and he describes the life in the flesh versus the life in the spirit. And it's quite interesting that this discussion of the works of the flesh is in a book that is about legalism. This is not to the Corinthians. This is the people who are going back to circumcision and trying to keep man-made rules. Starting in verse 19, he says, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. And those who are Christ's have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. You notice he doesn't say the works of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, long-suffering. You don't have to work to walk in the Spirit. You have to work to crucify the flesh. And the Spirit will take over. We sing this. Of course, we sing it in the King James Version. The fruit of the Spirit is love. And we also get to, we always get to the end, and I had absolutely no clue for many years what was meant by against such there is no law. Against such there is no law. What does that mean? Of course, there's no law against the fruit of the Spirit. But there's no law over against those who have the fruit of the Spirit. Why? Think of a law concerning the conduct of dead people. I don't know about you, I can't come up with a law. I have never heard of a dead person being put in jail or fined or getting a bill for overdue taxes or anything. There is no law for dead people, period. The law only applies to the living. That's why you bring yourself under a curse if you try to please God in the flesh, because it is the flesh that is subject to the law. The law applies if the flesh is alive. If the flesh has died, there is no law. You don't need a law, because the lawgiver, who will not contradict himself, is within you, causing you to walk in his works. The law actually resurrects the flesh. The law gives sin strength. And if we go back and try to please God in the flesh, the more we do it, the stronger the flesh gets. And the worse we do it, and the more condemnation we bring on ourselves. So how do we know whether we're walking in legalism or walking in the Spirit? How do we know if we're in the flesh or in the Spirit? Well, if we have outward corrupt works, and those works are dominating our lives, then that's a pretty good sign that the flesh is predominating. But it's harder to spot the flesh when it's disguised with the compromising clothes of legalism, because that can look pretty good for a while, at least to others. We can even make ourselves look pretty good to ourselves. So how do we know? Well, let's go to Galatians 5 and 15. Actually, let me just back up a couple of verses here. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty, only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, beware, lest you be consumed by one another. There's a bit of a translation issue in Acts 7 or 8, I don't remember which, was the story of Stephen. Translators can't agree whether Sanhedrin gnashed on Stephen with their teeth or they gnashed at him with their teeth, but either way, it's quite clear that they wanted to do was bite and devour the man. Same reason the Jews always hated Christ and his followers, because they preached that righteousness could come without the law, that righteousness could come by faith, that the older son who had stayed home and kept all the rules was not going to be the sole heir, but that the younger son who had gone off and devoured all the living with harlots could also inherit his father's goodness. Nothing made the Jews angrier than the suggestion that the Gentiles could be included without circumcision, without law, by faith, made it seem like all their efforts were for nothing. That is the heart of those who are walking under the law. it is to bite and hate and devour and compete with those with others, especially with those who are not under the same bondage. He says in verse 25 and 26, if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. What he's talking about is people who have their boast in the flesh. Look at all the good things my flesh can do. Oh, look, your flesh is not doing good things. I see five faults in you, and that makes mine look even better. This is the type of judgment Zach was talking about last week that is hypocritical and arbitrary and partial. And it's those who are trying to please God in the flesh who are most susceptible to making this type of judgment about other people. We always need to cut someone else down if we're trying to justify something that is condemned. The flesh is condemned. The flesh is condemned to the cross. We're like a lawyer who's trying to get a guilty person off. Only we don't have a jury we can fool. The judge already knows everything. I'm reading Galatians 5 a bit out of order, as I said. But I feel like in the middle of the chapter, and we sing this part too, Paul gives a summary, and the best possible summary, of the difference between walking in the flesh, dressed up by the law or not, and walking in the Spirit. I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. It's another epistle in which Paul discusses legalism quite a bit. And he makes it about as clear as he can make it in Colossians 2:20 and following, that you not only won't please God by making up and adhering to rules, you in the end will not even make headway against the lusts of the flesh. And this is a passage that I am thankful to have in a new translation, because I could never make heads or tails out of it in King James English. I'm not even sure everyone will recognize it. It says, therefore, if you died with Christ from the basic principles of the world, why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourselves to regulations? Do not touch, do not taste, do not handle, which all concern things which perish with the using, according to the commandments and doctrines of men. These things, indeed, have an appearance of wisdom in self-imposed religion, false humility, and neglect of the body. But, and here's the part that I couldn't understand in King James, but are of no value against the indulgence of the flesh. If you try to reform the flesh with rules, you are fighting a lion with a pop gun. It does nothing. Zero. It might clean up the outside of the cup and platter, which makes absolutely no difference for a little while. But it's of no value. Because the flesh remains the flesh. A pig remains a pig. It doesn't need to be dressed up, it needs to die. Those who are Christ's have not brought the flesh to heal with its affections and lusts. According to Paul, those who are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. Galatians 5:18 says, but if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. Now, we have a question. So we're supposed to crucify the flesh. Crucifixion is a fatal procedure. So why do we still sin? Because he says right here, flesh lusts against the Spirit. Well, how is the flesh lusting? Isn't it dead? Should be. I believe there's a place you can get to where it is. But the reality is, most of us will probably never reach that place. What we have to do is to keep the flesh in a perpetual state of dying. The question is not, do you have all spirit, no flesh? The question is, who is leading? If you allow the flesh to lead, the flesh will go around the cross, away from the cross, under the cross, over the, whatever, anything but get on the cross and die. If you allow the spirit to lead, the spirit will lead you to the cross. And you will have dominion over the flesh rather than the flesh having dominion over you. So if you're living a life of, well, some days God wins, some days the devil wins, that is not the life in the spirit. We are defined by whether our lives are led by the flesh or the spirit. If you look at a line on a map, or not a map, but say a graph that shows, say, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, what you're going to see is a lot of tiny adjustments. And it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. But you're also going to see an overall trend. So the Lord does not want us to live our lives with a magnifying glass on that graph of how much of the spirit we're walking is, uh-oh, it went down. Uh-oh, uh-oh, I'm not saved. It went down, it went down. What he wants us to do is back off from that graph and look at the line. Don't focus in on all the little dips and bumps. Look at where it's going. Is it going up? Is the spirit's line going up and the flesh's line going down? Or is it the other way around? That tells us who is leading. If we are led by the Spirit, we're not under the law. Are we walking in freedom? Are we looking to the left and right and judging and provoking and envying one another and angry with one another because others aren't in the same bondage we are under? Are we being mindful of earthly things? Is that our goal? Where are our eyes set? Are we going toward the cross? Are we running away from the cross? All of these things can tell us whether we're walking in the flesh or in the spirit. Who is leading? If you're walking in the wrong direction, you don't just go on walking and say, man, I wish I could figure out how to get it going in another direction, but man, that's another 3 miles. I'm going in the wrong direction. I'm getting further and further from my destination. This is bad. I can see on my compass right here. I'm wanting to go north. I'm actually going south. What's up with that? Wish somebody would fix this. Maybe years of counseling I can find. No, you stop. You turn around. You face the other way. Once you're facing the correct direction, you start moving your feet, you will tend to go the way you want to go. So I don't believe it's complicated to let the Spirit lead, to get out from under the law with its ability to hide the flesh and at the same time to bring you into condemnation. I believe it's just a matter of turning around. You steer where you're looking. If you mind earthly things, if you're mindful of the things of the world, say no to those things. That's what we do when we deny ourselves in fasting, whether it's in fasting food or something else, whatever's an idol, we just say no to it. Turn around and say, I'm going to turn from that. That's a lie. That thing that I am going after is a lie. It's an idol. I'm going to turn from it. And I'm going to look the other way. I'm going to let the Spirit lead. And I'm not going to negotiate, and I'm not going to compromise and see if I can have some of it and some of Christ and maybe have my cake and eat it too. I'm going to the cross. There is no other way to be free. There's no other way to walk in the Spirit and be a different person than to come by the cross of Christ. Circumcision will not work. Only the death that's symbolized in baptism will work. At the beginning, Paul said, you seem to have forgotten that Christ was crucified. We remember, Christ lives. He was raised from the dead. We can live also. Hallelujah. That's what we say on Resurrection Sunday. But do we on Good Friday say, Hallelujah, Christ was crucified that we might also be crucified in the flesh and be alive to God in the Spirit? But we should. We should say it. And we should value that ability that he gave us to crucify the flesh as much as we value the ability that he gave us to be raised in the Spirit, because those, as the legalism and license, are two sides of the coin of the flesh. The death and resurrection are two sides of the coin of life in the Spirit, and that's the life that Christ has given us to live.